Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. Ball State professor Michael Hicks is director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at the school. He's also a writer of a regular newspaper column that occasionally shakes things up. His opinions often have a way of challenging conventional wisdom. With a big political year coming up, we were interested in his thoughts about some of the staples of public debate. Economic development, for instance. Hicks says communities need to focus on the basics first, not what he calls the bells and whistles.
For most communities, the bells and whistles aren't really where the important impacts are. So a maker's district might be a very interesting bell and whistle. The fundamentals matter most of all. So having schools that meet the needs of most children, right? So I'm of the belief that, anybody can go to any school in Indiana and get a first-rate education. The fact is most don't. Right, and so a school that's going to meet the needs of most of the children, typically a good solid school, it seems to be the most important factor in household relocation decisions. And then that's followed very quickly by factors that are very similar, things like safety, community conditions, those sorts of things. And then we get to recreational activities. Right? Do we have things to do within walking distance or bike riding distance of the home? Is there, shopping for basic needs, food, and that sort of thing? And then once we've got those that are doing fairly well, then people start looking for a diversity of activities. Right? Are there other things that we can do? What other amenities are there? And things like a maker's district that might be able to retail, craft beer and other sorts of things would matter as well. Households really, one of the benefits of urban areas that we see in very large urban areas is the variety of activities that people can engage in. And so it's very difficult for a small community like a Marion or a Richmond or a Terre Haute or a Muncie to have that variety of activities that would attract households. And so the Makers District might be a good contribution for that. In terms of, aggregate economic activity, these sort of small-scale entrepreneurial activities aren't by themselves ever going to add up into a lot, but they can be indications of what you could do in a community to attract other households. And that's an oblique way of saying, first get the fundamentals right, get the schools right, get your roads paved, get your community safe, get your housing stock up to snuff. Then you can spend time worrying about other activities. But if you don't, it doesn't really matter how good your arts district is, which I think is arts and recreation are critical. It doesn't really matter how good they are if you have bad schools and lousy neighborhoods. But if you have good schools and good neighborhoods, you're going to have the recreation, you're going to have the arts, and you're going to have other opportunities naturally appear as part of a market process.
I don't know why this is, but I noticed I was in Denver and riding around in Denver and up into the Rocky Mountains, and the roads were great. I come back home, and you can't tell me there's any reason why ours should be so rotten.
I think it sort of speaks to the priority of local public spending that we've had problems in these areas. I mean, I think maybe a long historical view is helpful. So 100 years ago, Midwestern cities were the marvel of the world. Detroit was the fastest growing place in the world. A Muncie, a Kokomo, a Terre Haute, or Fort Wayne were explosive, dynamic, fantastic places to live that attracted households from all over the world. And what were we worried about then? We were worried about having a school system that was good, safe streets, transportation system, keeping streets clean. We were worrying about the fundamentals of government that are responsible for those activities. And then we managed to do very well with it up until the 1960s or 70s as productivity in manufacturing meant that there were fewer jobs and people started to go away. And so instead of saying, well, gosh, we're going to have fewer manufacturing jobs, we need to make sure our community is a place that people want to live, I think we shifted to the gimmicks. We shifted to business attraction. We shifted to all kinds of marketing schemes. We treated communities like a business, and they're not. I mean, the business paradigm, thinking about a community as a business, is inherently wrong in the sense that it's not making a profit. Businesses are important. They do what they do. Local government ought to be enabling commerce to occur by attracting households and making sure the streets are clean and that their schools are operating effectively. And so many places in Indiana are at the tail end of a half a century of malinvestment. Instead of investing in keeping the streets working and the schools operating and the physical plant of City Hall, enforcing codes in communities, they've instead relied on marketing and business attraction. And those policies that sound good just have not yielded good benefits, good effects in Indiana. So regardless of what the theory says about them, the actual economic consequences of business attraction have been very poor over the past 30 to 50 years in Indiana. And it's the places that are doing better, ironically, don't do much of that. Either nationwide, Northern Virginia is a place that reminds me a lot of the suburbs of Indianapolis 40 years ago. A lot of farmland, a lot of things going on. They don't do business attraction there. The powerhouse is the place where people want to live and work. And so urban centers spill over a lot of activity here. And so if you were to think about what communities could do that are going to attract population, let's, again, back to fundamentals from 1915, good schools, paved streets, sidewalks, public safety, the fundamentals that local government in Indiana followed a century ago when we were the success story of the world, not the last 50 years, which have been fairly grim for much of the Midwest.
Ball State's Michael Hicks, who is among those who like the primacy of place movement to not only create jobs, but to focus on improving life experiences in communities. You can find more details about that at theprimacyofplace.org. More from Hicks coming up, including what he says is an unhelpful focus on economic incentives to lure new jobs.
Birds dig until dawn, freedom hangs like heaven over everyone. Ain't nobody knows what a newborn holds, but his mama says he'll walk on water, wander back home.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com.
So every election cycle, especially, there's lots of talk about jobs that were created. Is that a gimmick to tout job creation efforts in the way that we do?
I think the short answer is yes. I think a lot of politicians are trapped in the rhetoric that the way that we make our community great is by bringing jobs instead of bringing households. If you bring households, you're going to have the jobs. They're going to follow the household. So today, 90 to 95% of all occupations can happen anywhere, right? So the ones that really matter, the high-paying ones, the computer folks, the physicians, the nurses, the school teachers, they can be anywhere. The footloose jobs that mattered a lot a half century ago are mostly gone. They're either not going to relocate to your community because they found the place they're going to be forever, or they're going to be so small in a small factory or a small logistics operation that you'll never notice them. This chasing of the smokestack that economists have argued against for now 30 or 40 years tends not to work because the U.S. Just doesn't create those jobs anymore. Since 1970, the U.S. has created about 90 million net new jobs. About negative a million of them are in these footloose industries. So all of the net job growth and then some have come in occupations that occur in every community in America. And so the real path to economic growth today is attracting the household, getting people to want to live in your community. And you just could drive around the Indianapolis Beltway or the Detroit Beltway or the Chicago Beltway to see this. The communities that are prosperous are the ones that attract the households. Where they're not, there's any business there. people can work anywhere. They were going to live in places that provide good schools for their kids, have value for their home that will persist throughout their lifetime. It'd be nice to sell your home for more than you bought it for 40 years later. And those are the factors that really tend to matter. And the policies that attract households are the policies that really matter as well.
Okay, but I'm thinking of Honda and Greensburg, Toyota and Princeton, Subaru and Lafayette, the Chevrolet truck plant near Fort Wayne. I could see someone arguing that, well, let's get another car plant.
That's a great question. Indiana's a great place to do manufacturing. We're at a we're above trend in manufacturing, but I'll make two points. The first one is that we're very good at manufacturing, so we're going to need fewer people to do it in 20 years than we do now. And so that if you're planning on manufacturing production to be around, that's true. If you're planning on manufacturing employment to grow, you're going to be terribly disappointed. The other factor is, though, and I love that you picked Greensburg and Princeton and Lafayette, because the story about where the workers from those factories live is exactly reinforces the point of primacy of place. So we have a Honda plant in Greensburg. Where does the bulk of those workers live? Have they moved to Greensburg? Are they living in Batesville and Shelbyville, places that have better schools? I guarantee you there's a higher share of manufacturing workers living in Batesville that have an A-quality school than have stayed in Greensburg. The same is true in Princeton. Princeton, Indiana, is a nice place to live, but very few people move there. When this Honda plant brought in 2,000 new jobs, they lived in Evansville. They lived in Illinois. They lived in places that had the amenities, the quality of place that they were looking for. The only place where we've seen a lot of employment growth in that local area is in Lafayette, which happened to be a factory that was located in a place that had a great amenities base already. And so they was able to retain those employees in big numbers. In a factory built in a place that doesn't have great schools, that doesn't have good housing stock, is going to find that the economic benefits of that are elusive. They dissipate out to the communities that have those schools and those communities for their workers to live in.
Are there places that Indiana can look toward and say, well, they're doing it right, or that communities in Indiana can look to? I had 5 students 1 year, graduated, all moved to Austin. I had 2 go to Denver without jobs. Mm-hmm. People want to go to Chicago. Can Indiana do better than what we're doing now in terms of creating these places that people want to move to?
I think so. You know, as a prof, I see this dynamic of students leaving all the time, right? They're going to leave to go to Austin or Atlanta or Denver, and they don't have a job yet. They're going to go there and look for the employment that they would wish, which you can imagine is more common today, since all the occupations we teach at the business college occur in every town in America. Every town in North America. And so those people could find a job wherever they would wish to live. That wouldn't have been true 50 years ago. The finance jobs would have been much more limited, for example, or the logistics employment much more limited. So I think the answer is yes. Business climate still matters. So I wouldn't argue that you wouldn't want to have a good business climate. Texas has done well with that. Indiana is a leader in that. So low taxes and a broad base matter. But I think we don't really have to even look outside of Indiana to see where some places have done a good job. We could go to Loudoun County, Virginia, which when I grew up there 30 years ago was a sleepy backwaters, kind of like Zionsville here in Indiana. And what they decided was we're going to be a place that attracts households. And they attracted households and Oracle and Microsoft and a bunch of other folks, because Microsoft and Oracle are looking for those households. So we see in Indiana a number of communities that over the long haul have said, look, I care desperately about keeping people in this community. Columbus is actually a world leader and an example of a community that had a very visionary business leader half century ago who invested in place, and they've done over that time have kept people who then care about public school. So the community, even though the major employer there has had up and downs, the community has remained fairly solid. Kokomo, of all places, Governor Goodnight there, or Mayor Goodnight, has done a fabulous job of saying, look, right now half our employment's in manufacturing. We like and respect manufacturing employment, but if people aren't going to live in Kokomo, our future is horrible.
Michael Hicks, the George and Francis Ball Distinguished Professor of Economics and Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research and Professor of Economics at Ball State University. Coming up, how the Fort Wayne area is being talked about nationally for doing a good job attracting talented people and what that can mean for a local economy.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
You've probably heard about the Primacy of Place initiative, the idea that people increasingly make decisions about where to work, play, and raise a family based on quality of life issues. This has major implications for economic development. Put simply, cities are better off working on the basics, good schools, roads, and public safety, than bidding for jobs with public money. Economics professor Michael Hicks of Ball State University cites Bloomington and West Lafayette as among the state's communities doing a good job of attracting residents. But he says the Fort Wayne area is the best.
Probably the best regional primacy of place governance apparatus is in the Fort Wayne. The Northeast Indiana Regional Partnership is known across the country as a place that can actually focus resources and attention on talent attraction. And they have a 5-point strategic plan that's all about attracting households. And I'll add another thing is that one of the economic phenomenon that we hear an awful lot about over the past 20 or 30 years is how much more productive urban places are. Just having a population growth by about 10% in your urban area causes the average worker in that urban area to have almost a full percentage point increase in their productivity, which is a gauge of what their wages are going to be. So bigger places do better, and it's because they're attracting more productive households. The benefits of being around more concentrated communities are very important in overall economic dynamism. And so Indiana has a great opportunity for that. We have a lot of cities. Almost all of the population of Indiana is within the labor market shed of an urban area, an urban place. So even if you live in a farm, your spouse can go work in an urban center. So Indiana can be very successful over the remainder of this century. But what's lacking is enough of those high quality places around the state where people would say, when I graduate from college, I want to live there. Or when I get out of high school, I want a job there.
What distinguishes those places? Is it the presence of the universities there? And if that's the case, what happened to Muncie in Delaware County?
All right, great question. So universities tend to do two things for your economy. They tend to give you a higher share of highly educated people, the faculty and staff that work at a university, and they attract a lot of the consumption pattern that those people would have. So you get a lot of diversity of recreation, so more different arts and recreational activities, right? Think how many cities have a big cricket league. Well, Bloomington and Muncie are both well known for their cricket leagues, right? So that diversity is there. On the flip side, you have a lot of college students, 25,000 to 50,000 college students who many of them don't yet have a college degree, so your statistics are low. They live in poverty like all college students do. So you get very enormous. It's no accident that the three most highly impoverished places in Indiana are Bloomington, West Lafayette, and Muncie, right? Because all those poor kids are going to college. I think the concentration of graduate programs that have accompanied the research universities at IU in Bloomington and Purdue and Lafayette, West Lafayette, have meant a larger economic impact than the research activities here at Ball State. Part of it is the type of research activity. So we do very well in our social sciences, we do very well in architecture and in medicine, but the very big bioscience research that's happening at IU and at IUPUI, and then the engineering work that's being done in Bloomington, in West Lafayette, makes a bigger economic impact there. Muncie will catch up to some regard. I also think that just having a bigger institutions matter an awful lot. So the best thing that could happen for Muncie is for Ball State to get a lot bigger. Ironically, the best thing that could happen for Ball State is for Muncie to get a lot bigger as well.
Are you hopeful that communities can spend the amount of money that they need to improve the basics to the point where they'll be attractive again.
I think so. And let me just make two points on this. The first one is there's always resources to take from less valuable activities and put them into more valuable activities. But it takes oftentimes a great deal of political courage to say, look, we don't really need a size of the fire department that we currently have. Our rates are good, so we're going to shrink that. I'm just picking on that one example because it's so common around Indiana, and then deploy those resources to some other activity that's of higher value. And I think in Indiana, we have a particularly great deal of low-hanging fruit in terms of the preponderance of overlapping governments. We don't need townships. We probably don't need multiple library authorities in each county. We probably don't need an airport authority in Muncie and many other small towns. And so there are resources that we could drag. But at the end of the day, I think there are also more revenues to be had from taxpayers who see value in their schools. And I think in many ways, Hoosiers have demonstrated already and are likely to in the future that they are willing to spend more money for better schools, for better neighborhoods, if they trust that the expenditures are going to be targeting that activity. And I use an example from our neighboring state of Ohio. I lived there for 3 years in a very fiscally conservative neighborhood. And we actually had self-imposed income taxes that we could, by referendum, raise rates on each year. In the 3 years that I was there, and this is a very conservative district, voted against Barack Obama twice by double-digit margins. In twice that I was there in 3 years, we raised our income tax by $80 a month for my household in order to build additional schools and to do improvements in schools, to add to some public safety and do some infrastructure expenditure. And I think the evidence across the country is that households are willing to bear a higher tax burden if the quality of the public services are of high value.
I know what lays.
Ball State's Michael Hicks talking about the prospects for cities like Muncie to remake themselves. Like others, he's talked about the primacy of place movement to focus on improving life experiences in communities and so attract more residents, which builds up the economy in a city. More details about that at theprimacyofplace.org. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time. Hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.